What's up, guys? Welcome to the Flawed Dad's Guide to Parenting, the podcast all about the average flawed dad learning to be a better parent. Today, we're lucky enough to be talking to Thomas Scannell, a fellow podcaster, YouTuber, and dad. Thomas has a great podcast and YouTube channel where he interviews fellow dads and some really interesting guests. They talk about a range of issues and topics that I've been really enjoying with everything that I've listened to or watched. The podcast is called Men That Talk, and the YouTube channel is called The Dad Coach. Thomas also spends his time as a life coach focused on working with dads on six core principles: mind, body, relationships, emotions, style, and skills. He's active on social media through Facebook and Instagram, and I'll link all the ways you can check him out in the show notes for this episode. Stick around and listen as a couple flawed dads figure out how not to screw up our kids too badly. Hey, Thomas, how you doing?
Wow, I wish I could sell myself as much as you just sold me.
It's so much easier when someone else is talking.
Oh my God, you're my new PR guy. What are you thinking about?
I was going to say, I think I given everything that I've listened to and watched of you, I think I underdid it. I'm trying to under-promise so that we can over-deliver in the episode.
That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. Thank you.
So thanks so much for taking the time to come on the podcast with us. We're really excited to talk to you. We were chatting a little bit right before this, and I was saying, you know, that everything you said on your podcast and on your website really connected with me, particularly with regards to the idea of men not necessarily having a place to go to, a safe place to go to talk about these types of issues that the dads and men in general go through. And I just wanted to start off, you know, tell me a little bit about your journey as to how you decided to start these, you know, being a dad coach and YouTuber and podcaster.
It's very specific.
Very, very. Thank you for defining it so specific. Very easy question to answer, of course. So let me see. So I can truthfully say I've never been someone that's had a direction. So when I was younger, I left school that I'd barely attended and didn't know what I wanted to do with myself. And somebody approached me and said, do you want to work with children? And at 19 years old, which is a field that most men don't feel comfortable, not because they're not good at it, but because it's a stereotype. The amount of jokes I had made about me working with children was ridiculous. Like everyone, all sorts of names being called to me in jest, but there's always there's no smoke without fire. Is the saying. I don't know if they use it in Vancouver, but in England. So that means there's an actual principle behind it. People think that men in childcare are doing something out of the normal. But for me, it was like, once I've done it a little while, I'm really making an impact on these children's lives by being there and being visual and just being me. Mm-hmm. And by helping them, it helped me.
Yeah.
And it made me come out of my shell. And this is before I've had children. But the whole time I've been doing it for 15 years, I've also noticed this, that other fathers then gel towards me because they see the relationships I'm able to build with their children.
Right.
And in the conversations I have with them, it's like, Thomas, I'm struggling to deal with this. I'm struggling to deal with that. My partner, my work, my life balance. So like I said, I never planned to do where I was. And I've only changed my name to The Dad Coach last week. My dad blog. It was all about just me and my journey and my experiences. And so through my experiences of life, it showed me that what is needed, the same way your gentleman that you explained to me, that between both of you, by supporting each other, you was able to have some sort of respite and some sort of peer-to-peer and not feel so depressed.
Right. Now, when you were working in your sort of previous career, if you would call it, you were mainly working with the children themselves, not necessarily with the parents. It was directly with them. Yeah.
It was directly with the children. So not only was that my previous career, but me and my partner took over the business.
Okay.
So it still is my career. I still work directly with children, trying to influence their lives. So in London, London's a lot bigger than me. In Croydon, I run food banks, especially over COVID-19, where I support families with food. We give Christmas presents out because we understood the problems with Christmas. So having influence with the children and parents has allowed me to do that. So me and my partner are starting our own podcast called Pillar Talk. That's where we're going to discuss the issues, relationships, that we found and spoken to other couples about. So it's all hand in hand. Everything I do is about children. It just so happens that men fall under that bracket. To support the children, you have to support the men.
Right.
Definitely. So maybe, you know, you mentioned starting a podcast with your partner there. Tell us a little bit about your family.
Okay, so we're my family, like I said, there's a lot we could talk for hours on my family. So, you know, we could talk for hours. So literally, I grew up with my mother till I was eight, mm-hmm. and then I grew up with my father from eight until he passed away 3 years ago.
Sorry for your loss.
No worries. It was they were both alcoholics. They struggled with emotional well-being and everything like that. But the bond that my father set the foundations for me and my brothers to, like, which was love. So right. That's all I focus on is love and how I can show people how I care for them and grow them through that. With including my direct family now is my partner, which is a blended family, which is a new term. I'm not too sure whether I like the idea of blended family. It's still a bit up in the air. So I have a child with my partner now. She mm-hmm. has two children with another partner.
Okay.
I have a child with a partner with another partner.
Okay.
And I also have an issue that needs to be resolved, which when they were born, I have not seen a set of twins. So I've experienced every single problem wow. I've ever experienced in my young years.
That's a lot on your plate. And okay. I imagine that had a lot to do with driving you towards what you've started now.
Right. It does, because I'm not gonna lie, I haven't always tried to be a saint. And I was always, I had a podcast yesterday, I spoke to someone and I was like, I used to allow myself 20 seconds to get over an issue. Mm-hmm. So it was literally like, okay, I'm not happy with this issue. I've got 20 seconds to deal with it and I move on. And as I've turned into my 30s, I think 30 is the breaking point, right?
Yeah.
Once you hit 30, you start realizing, do you know what? I'm reflecting on your past decisions. And it's like, do you know what? I made the wrong decision then. And it's not their fault. It's actually my fault for making that decision. How can I allow... I still haven't seen them. I'm still trying to work out. So if in a crazy world, the mother hears this podcast, Thomas Scannell is looking for the children, right? But I'm trying to resolve that situation. And I don't look for my, somebody got at me on Instagram last year and they were like, oh, how can you talk about fatherhood when you've got twins and you've got twins that you don't see? And I don't hide. I'm warts and all.
Yeah.
So it's not something I hid, and I used to always hide it. But once I hit 30, I realized that I shouldn't hide my problems. My problems should be open to everybody and I should be able to discuss them openly. So when they come at me with that, I've said, okay, I want to see these children. So if you know these children and you know the mother, please let them know.
Right.
And stop talking to me.
Right.
And it's like, don't get me wrong. Like I don't have it an emotional, I don't feel depressed about the situation. I want the situation resolved. I want to impact the children's lives.
Yeah.
But we need that. What's pushed me, like the idea that as men we make decisions, but people aren't willing to accept that. Sometimes you make mistakes, but you want to target us and belittle us. I'm 10 years older than what I was then. I've made had life experiences and so much more. Now, if you want to get at me because I'm not doing something, I actually want to amend this situation
right
in whatever way I can. So help me do this. Don't just get at me.
Yeah, I think you've hit on probably one of the most important things for dads to realize and correct is to take ownership over those issues, right? And that's a big part of the reason that we named this the Flawed Dads Podcast, right? It's
like I'm a bit depressed at the moment. We'll get funny at some point.
Yeah. It really is about owning, you know, the issues that we face and being able to laugh about them and correct them and get better Yeah, it's such an important thing. And now, you know, as a life coach and a dad coach, right? That ownership piece, I imagine it's something you talk about a lot.
That is the biggest thing is ownership. I spoke to a number of men, not just fathers, men that need help getting over certain aspects of their father and their mother. So sometimes as a parent can only offer you as much as they could offer you.
Right.
So how can you resent them for that? So there's no point in thinking backwards and thinking, oh, you made that mistake and they could have done a better job. Take ownership of where you are now. The parents done the best they could for what there is. Don't ask anything more than what they provided and then move on. So I had a conversation with a lady. She's in the same situation, but the opposite way. So she's got a child and the father doesn't, well, it has nothing to do with the child. And she was like, Thomas, but I can't believe that you want anything to do with the child again. I was like, of course, but what are you going to do when you get back? I was like, I can only say that I want part in the children's life. That's all I can do.
Yeah.
What the decision after that is not for me in control. And that's where, like you said, I can only hold responsibility for myself and my actions.
Yeah.
All the previous actions I've done, I can only try and work forward and trying to be the best human being that I can be.
Yeah, it's too bad that there is no time machine or something like that you can go back. I mean, that's
I swear down now, I would not want a time machine. I would not step into it. Right now,
that butterfly effect.
I might not get a lot of stick, but since that situation, I've grown so much that if I changed anything, I might not be the person I am today and be able to do the outcomes that I am aiming at today.
Yeah. Well, as far as I know, no way it does have a time machine. that is the biggest problem. One of the biggest problems is, you know, accepting that the past is the past. You know, like, listen, we don't have time machines, and what can we do? All we can do is try and move forward. And I get, you know, there's some pain and things going on, but you know, what are we supposed to do here? Do we want to delve on that, or do we want to move forward?
I don't know if you have any gentlemen in your circle that, so obviously if I was saying to come to you and I said, because this is another conversation I never had with friends until recently, it was like, if I come to you as a friend, would you say like, Thomas, you need to man up and move forward, or you need to define what you want to be? What would be your like advice to me and just say, Thomas, you need to do what you got to do, man.
Right. And that's hard. I mean, friends and, you know, I think everyone's been in situations where you can see someone else. I mean, a simple example is, you know, one of your good friends is dating someone that you just don't like at all, right? Like, you're like this.
Because that's never happened before.
This never happened. I'm not talking about anyone within this room.
This room, yeah.
Nothing at all. This is just a totally hypothetical situation. But, you know, you have those situations where you're like, you know, in your heart or your head or whatever it is, you want to say something like, dude, this person is not for you. Like, you know, they're kicking dogs outside their house, and, you know, you gotta do something about it.
But
it's hard to say it.
Yeah. I find that if you ask the right questions, you can guide somebody to their own resolution of the issue. Right. And
father coaching, man. That's exactly
that's interesting one. Can you delve into that a little bit more?
So Graham does this to me all the time, right? He will lead me through questions when I'm going through, you know, stuff with my kids, because I've got the three girls, right? And tons of stuff going on in our household in any given moment. And, you know, Graham generally just leads me down the path of coming to my own resolution. And so, you know, you asked, what would you do if somebody came to you like that? I'd just ask questions and figure out what it is, what course of action it is that you want to take in order to get there. I mean, it may cause a few more bumps on the road, and it's not going to be smooth, but, you know, at least it'll be your decision. And then going back to the ownership thing, right? You do have to take ownership over the decision to make. You don't want somebody necessarily to tell you what course of action you should take, because then you can just point the finger at them and go, well, you told me to do this. Like, this fucked me up really bad.
I agree with that. And that's what I've learned is, the moment you tell someone what to do, especially your children, I don't know if you don't get it, you tell your children what to do, you're asking for the house to be burnt down.
Oh, yeah.
So you question what they do, it's a different outlook. Right? They might think about it. They might still do what they want to do, but their reply back to you is completely different if you ask a question rather than tell.
Right.
Yeah. So you've been a dad for a while now, you know, you got a variety of fathering situations both behind you and ahead of you now. If you could go back and tell yourself something, you know, before you came a dad, you know, what was the biggest challenge that you were going to face as a father, or what do you wish you knew as a dad before you became one?
Before I come a dad, I'd say filter your partners.
Yeah.
Work out a situation, because again, like I said, growing up, I don't know who in the room had problems with partners that other people didn't like. learn to feel your
partners. It wasn't Graham.
It's all hypothetical.
No names. But yeah, learn to filter. And I definitely, when I was younger, I used to think sex was, it was like a badge that I wore for getting different partners, sexual partners, without thinking about the implications. So before I become a dad, it would be think about the implications of having sex before anything else. That'd be category number one. Secondly, you can't always control. Once you've made that decision and something's happened, you can't control the situation. So my fault now is take responsibility, which I wasn't always of that mindset, would be take responsibility for whatever you started the course of action for, is always take responsibility for it.
Oh, it's so much easier to point the finger at somebody else and make them responsible for it.
Sex is also fantastic.
Yeah.
Two fantastic things.
it's real hard. It's real hard, I guess.
Well, that's definitely something that Graham and I have known each other for a long time now. It's been almost 20 years. We were fraternity brothers at university together. And you know, being in a fraternity, the idea of sex as a conquest, you know, as a source of pride, was pretty strong.
Yeah.
So Graham, it was maybe an underlying factor. Yeah.
Shocking. Yeah.
So I completely agree. Like, going back, if you could take a step back and say, you know, the importance that you're putting on sex right now and the variety of partners is not necessarily the direction you want to go, particularly if it results in kids.
Yeah. I'm not a religious person. Full stop. So I don't follow any faith, but I can understand the principles of why they say sex is so sacred. Mm-hmm. Like, it can cause so much, never mind sexually transmitted disease, but children, it means you're tied to that individual for the next eternity.
Yeah. Right. So some people you may not necessarily want to be tied to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that.
So when you're doing dad coaching and stuff right now, and I know you've got your six principles that you focus on. Yeah. If you were going to narrow it down to just a couple of key tips that you would give to dads, you know, whether it's new dads or experienced dads, what do you find, you know, in working with clients and talking to the people on your podcast, what do you find are the biggest issues they're facing? And what are your tips for those issues?
Number one is defining yourself. So a lot of us fathers end up going to work, coming home, going to work, coming home, for an outcome, which is normally not something we set out for. So I'm not even, to be fair, I'm older than social media. So my problem wasn't social media. My problem was the going up to London and getting drunk and the idea of big cars and quick women and fancy clothes. So we get caught up in a idea that financial gain is the be all and end all.
Right.
To become a father coach and to take a step of owning my own business, I took a financial step backwards. Mm-hmm. And before I did that, I defined what I needed in life. Now, don't get me wrong, I still want, my big aim is to own a farm. I've set myself a 4-year thing to own a farm, have a working farm where I can work on and people can come out and have experiences there. But that's because now I've defined myself. So number one tip would be define yourself, work out what your real goals are. And that sometimes you have to be selfish with your time and who you are. Say no to people. The kids in that are so important to you. Going home and having a go at your children because your boss has been angry.
Yeah.
Like, is the wrong way forward.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's a tough situation for a lot of dads. And I think they get trapped feeling like they don't have a choice in their life, and they don't know how to take ownership over their own situation.
And that's
especially if you're busy.
Sometimes we're busy for no reason. Sometimes we're busy,
but right,
our life has allowed us to want to be busy. I remember at one point I had to call my brother up, and I was like, bro, you know what, actually getting up at 4:30 in the morning to go and do something because you're doing it and other people I see are doing it. And it's like, I got caught in a spiral. I think it was called fear of missing out, FOMO.
FOMO. Over it.
Fear of missing out. So it's like, oh my God, they're working a bit harder than me. But if you start prioritizing things, then things fit into place. Okay, I don't know if you've heard on my podcast, one of my biggest things and the best things I've done is set my phone to do not disturb from a certain time to a certain time.
Right.
You can't get hold of me unless it's an emergency. So that's one thing, that, so now I don't sit on my phone messaging people. If it's not an emergency, you talk to me within my business hours, mm-hmm. my personal business hours. Mm-hmm. Who are you to call me when I'm spending time with my daughter?
Yeah. Yeah. Graham does a great job of that. I have become completely addicted to the notifications on my phone. I had a career where for 10 years, that was my career, is I had to be on call 24 hours a day, where clients were contacting me 11, 12 o'clock at night to answer questions. And it became such a huge part of my life that, you know, my phone buzzes and I wake up now at 1 o'clock in the morning because the phone's buzzed. Yeah. And I need to take a page out of your book and Graham's book with regards to that, because it's a real problem.
Before I've done that, I know what you say, especially when you start your podcast and you start the Instagram journey, it's like you're looking at insights, you're waiting for the ticks and you're waiting for the likes. Why am I not getting any stuff? And it's like, it's
gratification, got gratification for sure.
Yeah, instant gratification, that's a big one. Like I said, that would have been one of my tips. You don't need instant gratification. Anything that's worth keeping is long haul. My partner, I knew 10 years before I settled down with her. Like, I'm not saying that was a good thing, because she knows all my warts and all my things that cause it conflict at times, but it took 10 years for me to grow and actually acknowledge who she was. And a lot of the guys that I talked to on my podcast, it is like they knew that their partner was going to be their partner, but it took a courting period before they become their partner. It wasn't like I took you out for drinks and slept with you. It was a courting period. I knew where I was going to go with you because I could sense that. So instant gratification has never been the way forward. That'd be another tip. Thank you for bringing that up, Graham.
Yeah, instant gratification is definitely a huge problem. I heard you mention that on one of your recent podcasts about the courting period and how important that was for you, and seeing each other at your worst and your bests throughout that. I went the opposite direction, and I was dated, engaged, and married in just over a year. And then 4 months after that, pregnant. And so
How long are you in the relationship now for?
We've been married for 11 years now.
Wow. Yeah. When a man knows what they want, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a big change, though. I mean, when my first kid was when I was 26.
We're old as dirt relative to you.
No, it's same age. Exactly same age. 37.
Yeah, I'm 37. My first child.
I thought you said you were 30. I'm sorry.
I think 30s is where you start realizing. But I'm 37. I think my first daughter, I think I was 24, 25.
Yeah.
She's 14 now. I was 23. She's 14 now. So yeah, I was 23.
Which is just crazy. I mean, Graham and I talk about the years, the teenage years that we've got coming up. You know, both raising daughters. I'm fucking terrified.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how you're handling it, but I am absolutely terrified of this time.
You know what? Lucky enough, when I got with my lovely partner, Selena, who I'm going to say, because hopefully she listens to it.
Why don't you have a listen at the 20 minute mark for just Mark, random reason?
Make sure you tag it, please.
I definitely will.
Her oldest child, or our oldest child, is 21, so he's gone through that stage now. And it was a highlight. But like I said, because I've worked with teenagers all my life and I've worked with children all my life, I kind of know how they are, but it doesn't let you know, like, they really do shut off compared to the young. When my youngest daughter was 7, and she's like, before I got on the phone, I was playing with her, chasing around the house, and they want that time. When they hit a certain age, it's like they're big now. It's like, I don't want nothing to do with that. Yeah, what are you talking about? It's only when, and I reflected on myself, and that's what I always do, is that always reflect. So as long as you're always, for me personally, I'm not saying it for anybody else, dealing with your teenagers, always be honest. Always be honest, because I can actually say I've lived through everything they're living through, maybe without the social media, but I understand bullying. I understand partners. So my daughter has had issues at the moment with her mother. I had them same issues, but I'm going to be honest with you. Before I tell you off, I'm going to tell you how I was and what I did wrong. And then you make your own decision, because no bullying will ever be anything. Like, I think we said it already. Telling my child what to do. She's 14 years old. She thinks she's a big woman. Telling my son to do, which is the same age as my daughter, even though they're not twins, they're from different, obviously the son is from the mother. That's not going to win. You know what? I'm going to keep myself fit. hopefully you can see that I can still beat you in a race. I say that regularly because I want everyone to know that we're in a race still. And I'm going to keep my, I'm going to keep myself educated by, I'm not someone for education. I was dyslexic and I struggled to comprehend words sometimes. So I've never been someone to sit down and do a degree, but I'll do loads of small courses, loads of self-development stuff. Yeah. Rather than reading a book, you know what? I've listened to this Audible book and I'll talk to them about it and tell you and want them to question me because I'm not a dictator. I am a person that can be wrong as well.
Yeah. So that was going to be one of my questions is, you know, in terms of self-improvement for you, obviously, you know, you're dealing with other dads, providing advice or asking questions, those sorts of things. What do you do for yourself in order to improve?
Like I said, my brother is unbelievable. So he's a younger brother.
Yeah.
He is like 100 miles per hour, trying for this personal development and dragging me along with him. So I have no choice but to come along with him. If I'm not doing something, it's Thomas, what's going on? What are you doing? Okay, sorry, yeah. Even though he's the younger brother, he's very much about development and moving forward. And like I said, because who you put in your circle, I've had to clear out a lot of my circles. I don't know if it's the same as you, gentlemen. If people aren't moving the same way as you,
right?
Again, you have to learn to say no and say thank you very much, but I'm moving this way. You're not doing it wrong, but we're not going in the same direction. And surrounding yourself with people on the same move. So people that will question you, critique what you're doing, explain why you're doing it wrong. And I don't always take it on because I understand my children, but I will listen to you and it'll sit in the back of my head and listen to your wife, listen to your woman.
That might be one of my big challenges. And she'll listen to this and then she'll agree.
I think all women will agree with that.
I think guys maybe listen. It's just the choice of whether to act.
Well, I think that's the thing. We hear, but we don't necessarily listen.
That's right.
You know what? Yeah, I fully agree with that. My big thing is I will hear what you said, and because you've told me what to do, I'm gonna ignore you at that moment in time. Give me a week and I might listen.
I should say that is not always true. I don't know what it is for you gents, but for me, if the TV's on or something, I am dead to the world. So people can be talking to me and there is nothing going on
nothing wrong.
I've had so many conversations with my wife, Vanessa, and said, you know, she said, oh, I asked you something. I said, did I respond to you? Like, did I say yes or something? Because if I didn't do anything, then I did not hear you. I am not listening. Like, this is, you know, this, we've been together long enough. This is not my fault.
If I haven't responded, I wasn't listening. Yeah, that's right. You were talking to yourself.
I guarantee it, but the fact that I didn't answer means for sure.
I noticed that my kids picked that up too. Like they are so very similar to you, Graham. If I'm sitting and watching something, I'm dead to the world.
Yeah.
Right. But my girls are exactly the same thing. And it drives Rachel up the wall.
Drive you crazy though when you're trying to talk to them or you understand them.
I kind of get it. I my oldest has ADHD, dyslexia, that kind of stuff. And I think her and I are very, very similar. And so we have a lot of the same problems. And so it will frustrate me for the first couple seconds, but then I will notice, I'm like, I get it. And so her and I have started, we text back and forth because she's got a little iPod, that sort of thing. And so I'll send her little clips of things about ADHD or about dyslexia or that sort of thing. And, and kind of relate to her through third party content. And she really enjoys that. She's like, oh my gosh, that's so similar to the way that my brain works. And it's kind of helping her to get over some of the self-conscious issues that come with, you know, being different because of disorders and that sort of thing. So
I think with being a father, and because I like what you said, Dave, understanding that all your children need different styles of parenting. They all acknowledge you in different ways. If you try to do that with all your children, they'll probably like, why is dad sending me this? Like, one child might like to be, I don't agree with beating, so I'll never beat my child. One child might be, like I said, visually. One child might be audibly. One child might be, you know what, they just like sitting down and relaxing, right. Man.
Yeah.
Leave them to relax and keep just be consistent about they need to do what they need to do. But understanding what your child needs are is so important, and understanding they all have different needs.
It's kind of like the idea of the, what is it, the 7 love languages, right? Where some people, their love language is touch, others is praise, others is experience, appreciation, you know, those sorts of things. Our kids have the same, you know, method of how they're going to receive information. Yeah. And so, you know, I have one daughter who's all about touch, and, you know, mm-hmm. When she used to fall asleep when she was really young, she's 8 now, she would need to put her hand inside of your hand and do this back and forth in order to fall asleep.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Just the physical sensation of rubbing the back of her hand against your hand helped her to fall asleep.
Yeah.
And she would much rather cuddle than do anything else, right? That's the way that she gets appreciation from Rachel and I. And so I agree with you about the, you know, we have to parent our children differently based on who they are. We did an episode on, what was it called, Graham? How all parenting advice is wrong.
Oh yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Yuko Munakata. Did I get that right, Graham?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. and we had this big debate, and I'd
speak
love to-
for Yuko, by the way.
I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Thomas. So Graham and I date about the, or argue about nature versus nurture, yeah. and which one is the greater contributing factor to the way a child is going to grow up. So in Yuko's thing, she argues that the science says, no matter what you do as a parent, it doesn't matter because nature is going to determine what your child grows up to be. I'm an advocate for that. Graham believes that nurture is the driving force.
It's a weird one, right? Like people always say that I sit on the fence. So the way I look at it is, I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer to that question.
No,
I
just you have to solve
it. I have the answer. No, you have to, yeah. I as a man, as a father, try to lay the best foundation that I can offer. So I don't believe, because I had a conversation again, I've like so many conversations, like society is dictating what your children are doing all the time. But once they hit the teenage years, we lose control. For 6-7 years of their child's lives, we're going to lose control. We can only lay the foundation. Like we're saying, like my daughter's 7 now, I'm her idol. Mm-hmm. I am her king. Like there's no one stronger than me. I'm the best person in the world. Anything that she needs, she can come and hold my hand for. As soon as she hits 14 and peer pressure comes involved, and it's like, oh my God, my dad can't support me, or I don't want to tell my dad something because right. I don't want him to go off the top, or you know what? And the I call it snowball effect, I'm going to call it this mm-hmm. time.
Right.
So once the first layer is set and her friends have said something, now she can't say it, and then it just keeps on layering up.
Yes.
And it becomes a problem. So that's when society takes over. And I can only still be that first layer that's always there. So no matter how hot the sun is, melting this snowball down, I will never melt, because I will always be consistent in what I'm about. I will always be the stone that she can fall on,
right.
the foundation. She can always come back to my house. Even if I don't like you, don't want to talk to you because you made this mistake, your bedroom will always be available to you. And we can talk when we both calm down.
Right.
So in a way, I can lay a foundation, but society has a 50% once they hit 15, maybe even more so. TikTok, she's on TikTok. She's 6 and she loves TikTok. All the dancing, all the thing, and music now is so...
hypersexualized?
Yeah, just a little bit. Wet ass pussy. What the hell is that about? Like, are you crazy? My daughter's 6 years old and they got TikToks about that. What? Doesn't make no sense. So she's going to be influenced until she's managed. All I can do is lay the foundation and make sure that foundation never changes.
Yeah.
Well, as much as I change, it does, but it's consistent throughout our lifestyle. Because I think as kids, we all know, like you said, you was in a fraternity. Mm-hmm. As a fraternity member, what's the influence like from all the people, your peers?
Yeah, it's massive. It was absolutely massive. And you know, the last 20 years because of it has largely been driven by the people that you choose to associate with, right?
Yep.
I mean, you were talking about that earlier, and having people like Graham and some of our other fraternity brothers in my life in particular has had a huge influence. And so I mentioned to you that one of the issues that we're facing right now, you know, speaking to setting the good foundation, one of the issues that I'm facing right now is my 8-year-old daughter is going through a period where she's got suicidal thoughts and that sort of thing. And it's a really tough situation. And what I've been trying to do is reframe it in my mind that I'm fortunate that this is happening now when we've got a good foundation, or at least the opportunity for rebuilding a foundation. And there's open lines of communication, rather than when she's 14 and she thinks I'm an absolute moron and doesn't want to talk to me. Right. Which, cause I know that's coming. I mean, my 10-year-old is already there. She already thinks I'm an idiot. So, you know, I know that at 14, that's going to be exponential in terms of how she feels about me. So
one QB kicks in, it's all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. And so having a daughter who's 14 and going through puberty and TikTok and all that kind of stuff, what have you done in order to, you know, manage the whole social media and technology aspect? Like what sort of thing, what tips would you give to a dad if they're dealing with that?
What tips would I give with that? So I can only go by my experience and I always go back to laying the foundation first. So I work on myself. So if I'm a father that sits on my phone all day, how can I tell my child any different? They're not going to be different. So I work on a respect level with my daughter that's 14 years old and also my son who's 14 years old. So I sit on my phone as much as I need to sit on the phone and then come away from it. But if I talk to you and discuss with you about what's going to happen, it happens. I explain to you because social media is adapting daily and changing and moving forward.
Yeah.
So it's something we can't, I struggle to keep up with as somebody that's on social media actively. I can't keep up with all the platforms. I'm not on TikTok. Yeah. I don't get it, but I'm willing to learn from you. So let's talk about your experience on TikTok. Why are you not doing that on TikTok? Like, are you embarrassed? What is it? Is someone messaged you wrong? So I want to make it my household, the real life, which some people are missing, that this is real life from indoors, a place where we can open up and talk about what we're doing. Unlucky, we couldn't follow, our parents couldn't follow us as children. So on social media, we can't keep a 24-hour eye.
Yeah.
I think I was talking to a parent and their child had worked out how to get around parental controls and start accessing different things, like was anti-age stuff, where children are smarter than us. When it comes to the internet, they grew up into it. So I just create an open platform and just be there for your children. Right. It's really difficult because I don't believe in a right answer. I believe in support.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter who it is, I'm not telling my child what to do. I'm supporting my child in their circumstance. So I'm willing to open up and I'm going to try, because it's very hard to not judge. I'm going to try not to judge you so you can open up. Me and my daughter, I don't know, again, I'm going to use my daughter because she's not with me all the time. So it's easy to pinpoint things where we have disagreements. So we were talking one time and I said something about our uncle on her mum's side. And she come up to me and said, "No, Dad, I don't like you because of that. I don't like what you said." I was like, "What do you mean?" And she said, "I don't like what you said." And I was like, she's 14 years old. I could have been a father and said, "Well, I'm right." Right. Okay, so what you don't like, let's explain and discuss and talk about it and thing. And then I said, sorry, at the end. I was like, sorry, you know what? I was wrong to say that. It was the wrong thing, course of action to say that. We should have had a conversation. I should have known your opinion in the first place.
Right.
I'm not right. Even though they're 14 years old, I'm not right. So next time she feels uncomfortable, she'll come and, because she knows if I'm wrong, I'll always say it. So there is, for me, and it's weird because most people that are trying to sell themselves always say, my way is the right way.
Yeah.
Right.
There is no right way. I'm just going to guide you on the best road for you.
Yeah.
Now, your interactions with, the coaching side and talking to children specifically, what unique perspective do you gain from that side? Because I would think it's a very interesting perspective that you get from actually talking to some of these people, because they I would think share some type of stories that, you know, as you said, especially in the teenage years, but you work with teenagers at some point in time. talking to someone else who's not within the family group, I would think, gives you a different perspective. And so what have you learned in that capacity?
So what have I learned from that? We're all children. No matter how old we are, we're all children. We've just got a bunch of layers built on top of us. But in essence, we're all trying to be the child and trying to find happiness. So from, I can see someone's child and see they're happy and they're thing. The adult can't wait to join in with the child. But because of all these extra pressures that are built up on top of us,
right,
we're putting away and we've got so much. We've allowed people to define us, that's defined us. So when you see children playing, it's like, you know what? They're just in their natural state before. They're not, I see them in reception. I don't know what reception is in Canada, but that's like the first year of school when you start school.
Kindergarten.
Develop to last year of primary school, which is before they go into the bigger teenage school.
Right.
And then see them from that into college years. It gives me a perspective and I see them develop and I see the potential lost because of how, not just how they're defining themselves, but how they've allowed others to define them.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm talking to fathers, I'm looking at not who you wanted to be all the time. If you're coming to me, that means you've allowed others to define you because you're not finding fulfillment in where you want to be. Because at some point in your childhood, in your teenage years, in your adolescence, you succumb to the pressure. So we need to release that pressure in some way.
Okay. So would you say that you're an advocate for, I mean, I guess it'd be children and parents, but for them kind of making their own mistakes, you know, in the conversations you have with your daughter about.
Always their mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always.
So you get the opportunity as a coach to learn from others' mistakes, but then the people that are around us, we let them make their own mistakes. Right.
Yeah. You know what? Even learning from others' mistakes, like if you told me right now that you did something wrong, it doesn't mean I'm not going to do it still.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I'm not going to do it still. I just now know.
Well, maybe you did it wrong.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And that's the same way I look at self-development books. And like when people listen to Walmart talk about his stories, just because I copy everything he does doesn't mean I'm going to be a billionaire.
Right. Yeah,
I just know what his story was, and I'm inspired by his story. I listened to David Goggins' book. Like, if I followed everything he did, I still couldn't be him because I don't have the mindset to beat pain.
Yeah,
right.
So it's just a guideline of like, you know what? Oh wow, people overcome this situation doesn't mean I can. And another thing that I understand about myself now is happiness. Like, I'm not always meant to be happy. So when someone says, how am I? And I say, I'm great. I don't mean I'm really great. I mean, I'm as great as I could be right this second. On this planet Earth, I'm as good as I can be.
Yeah.
And there's ups and downs and roller coaster rides. And I'm always happy. So even when I'm upset about something, I understand that it's part of life and part of living.
Yeah.
And that's why, sorry, go on.
I think that's important for dads to know. I mean, even though we're learning from other people's mistakes, you know, we still step in shit. And even once we stepped in shit, we're probably going to step in that same shit again.
Yeah, right? And be happy about it, man. Be happy about the smell. Yeah.
What is one of your biggest parenting pet peeves?
It's weird because I try to sit on the fence, but I don't think anyone should ever hit their child. I don't think anybody should ever raise your hand to your child. The moment you raise your hand, you succumb to your feelings and your emotions. And now you're teaching your child that anger means hitting somebody, or if someone does something wrong to me, I should express myself in violence. Always explain. And I don't know, again, because of my working with children, my perspective with children was, if I can't deal with a situation or a child is being too much for me to control in my work profession, no one's ever going to hit someone in their daily work, are they? So I've always learned that if I can't deal with the situation, step away and get someone else to deal with the situation. Yeah. So there's mother to come in and deal with the situation. Now there's an older brother who's 21. You know what? You've experienced. He might relate more to you. So if you hit your child, you've probably done something. You need to look at yourself because your child deserves to be hit.
Yeah,
and that might be an easy one, actually. So let me find something else because I think that might be easy. I think less and less. Trying to live your dreams for your child. That for me, the amount of parents that try to do that with this, they need to be sports players, or they need to be this, or you need that. Mate, life is so much more. Unless you're entirely happy with your life, you should just be there for guidance. Unless you can tell your child you were happy with everything you've done in your life, just be the guide for your child. Don't be the authority.
So you mentioned...
I'll tell you, my biggest pet peeve is eye rolling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just on that anger situation, man, I get an eye roll. Ooh, that sends me to...
That's a relationship problem as well. If you eye roll me, like, what do you mean? You might just say what you got to say, innit?
My daughter has learned quite quickly. She doesn't do it very often. I think she learned quite quickly that doing an eye roll sends me to a place that.
Maybe I got the question wrong. My pet peeve is what my child does to me. Would you like to know that?
Yeah, that'd be great.
That too.
What my child, something that I can't, even though I tried to be, again, I'm always going to say I tried to be on the fence and tried to be as I can't stand being questioned. So every time I'm questioned, I need to take a breath because who are you to question me? But then it's always like, okay, this is why. Yeah, the moment right. They question me, why am I having to go to bed? Why do you have to go to bed? I'm your dad, go to bed. Oh, but it's bedtime, you don't like getting up in the morning. And I've learned as well that sometimes I'm gonna let you stay up later than what you meant to because you want to, but right. I'm still gonna wake you up at the same time. How about that? Now you learn from your mistake.
That's right.
That's a good one. Yeah, allowing them the opportunity to suffer the consequences of their own action. So you talked a little bit about your brother. You talked a little bit about your dad being influences on the way that you parent and that sort of thing. Who else would you consider like a really influential person in the way that you parent? Probably your partner.
My partner and her mom.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I'm not very, or I haven't been a family person. I'm not a fan of Christmas. I'm not a fan of birthdays. And I think that's to do with my conditioning as a child. I never dealt with that. So it's just me, my brothers and my father coming into a relationship where there's a family base that shows me what real community right. is and what real community can do. So they meet up every birthday. So I'm like, why are you meeting up? Like, what's the point in doing that? But the nieces and the nephews and the cousins and the uncles are meeting up where they 9 to 5 gets you so caught up in your everyday life that we forget to appreciate everybody. And meeting up just for a simple birthday that I don't care about means that, know what, I haven't seen you in 6 months. Let me say hello to you and how's life been? And offer that opportunity to meet again and just relate. And then the kids now become another community. And I think that's another thing, like I said, in society, we're losing our community. Again, I don't know in Vancouver, but I feel...
Oh, it's very much in Vancouver. Vancouver has this... So Graham and I live just outside of Vancouver in a little area to the south that's a little smaller and a little more community-oriented, but we both used to live in downtown Vancouver. And it's Vancouver is a city that feels like it's a metropolitan. And so everybody has this sense of pride of, oh, you know, I live in such a big city that I don't know my neighbor. And it's kind of this bullshit. We're like London or New York or that sort of thing where it's not. Vancouver is tiny in comparison. And so we definitely see this loss of community here in the Vancouver area. And it's really hard as a parent to lose that sense of community because you don't have the people to lean on. I've basically followed Graham around. Like we wound up living on the same floor in the same condo building in downtown. Now we live a kilometer apart from each other out in a smaller community. And so we've always kind of had each other to lean on as parents. And, you know, without that, we really wouldn't have that much of a community.
I think that's a big thing with men. As men, we're willing to leave our community for our women. Mm-hmm. So like you said, women normally, I don't know what your thing, but women normally are able to stay in some sort of connection with their families. Men, I don't know if it's a conditioning, we kind of just get on, you know what, we've moved away, let's just carry on, we go to work, we keep our head down, we make new friends at work, and a lot of us end up drinking with friends at work and whatnot, but they're not our real friends, and it's not really a community. But women, they've got this idea where they can just be, please don't, women, if you're commenting, don't, I'm not stereotyping you, okay? But they've got this thing of connection, and that's what I just think is so important. Like I said, you're lucky to have a friend where you stayed so close together, because it's not very often where we move from our community into a new community, and we've got someone that we've grown up with and knows us as a person.
Yeah, we're kind of, I mean, to make a metaphor of it, we're kind of like lions where we have to go out and find our own pride, right? Yeah. We want to create this own, our own group where we feel like a leader amongst it, right? Yeah.
And I don't like the idea of it's my pet hate is the alpha male thing.
Yeah.
I cannot stand it. There's no such thing as an alpha male. And 90% of the people that call themselves alpha male are just gym freaks that like to go to the gym. Like, sorry to everybody that likes to call themselves alpha male, but you're probably not. You're not a leader. A leader is someone that has people that follow them. So how can you call yourself an alpha male? People put you up on a pedestal and say, not you're an alpha male, but they just follow you because you're charismatic. You take ownership. You're responsible, mm-hmm. not because you go to the gym and you've got big biceps.
I think that's dead on. That a real alpha, the leader of a pack or of a group, is actually an empath, right? They have the ability to understand other people's emotions, to then convey those emotions back and be able to alter the decision making process of others through that empathy. And there's a really good book. By the guy who runs the Fortune magazine. And it's called Humans Are Underrated. And he talks all about the future of work and how empathy is the most important thing, because it's the only thing that machines and artificial intelligence can't replicate. Mm-hmm. Right. And so as a leader, being empathetic and understanding those people that surround you is significantly more important than being, you know, the gym rat with big muscles. And I mean, I'm the opposite of the gym rat, so because I don't go to the gym.
But in today's society, they'll have you believe you're not a leader because, mm-hmm. again, it's not everything. It's social media wants to push a certain thing forward because I think we're not even conditioned. As humans, we like sugar. We like things mm-hmm. that look aesthetically nice. So the more appealing it is to our eyes, we think it is. So someone shouting at us and looking with this, like a god, like Hercules has come. Oh, look at him. He's such a leader. All he's trying to do is sell us his 6-week muscle gain program.
Right.
Like, oh, what's going on here? And women get like, I caught another conversation the other day. It was about women. It's like they get caught in it. Like they lose their natural hair and they want to put fake hair in because they want to look like the nearest model. They're going to get bum injections and breast implants because the culture has defined who they want to be. And we're not defining ourselves because of our loss of community. Rather than the leader being in charge, we don't have any leaders. I don't believe we have a leader anymore. We have 6 million people that are leaders because they got blue ticks on Instagram and
right.
Facebook and Twitter. And they're our leaders because they share all the information and none of us can process it fast enough to actually say this is bullshit. Sorry right. for swearing.
No. This is, we swear a lot on this podcast.
Good. I've tried to hold it back. I'm quite a big swear as well.
No, we're good. This is a good fucking podcast. So, I think Graham and I were having this conversation before about, you know, political capital, that there just isn't any out there, and leadership in all societies is really challenging. And, you know, we in Canada, you know, from a political standpoint, we tend to stand on stay on the fence, much like, you know, your philosophy about it. And we have the benefit of watching places like the United States to the south of us, or even across the pond in the UK with your wonderful Boris Johnson. And I wanted to ask, because this is something that we're all going through right now, with regards to COVID and, you know, the UK having gone through multiple lockdowns now, how are you finding that COVID is affecting either the dads or the kids that you're regularly working with? Because it's huge impact here and we haven't had anywhere near the restrictions placed on us.
Yeah.
I can answer that question from like probably 6 different points of view. So I'm going to start sure. with my point of view.
Yeah.
My point of view is when I first went into lockdown, I'm not going to lie, obviously you've got Costco because Costco is an American organization.
Yeah.
Me and my partner went into lockdown because it's childcare business, everything shut down. I went and bought 6 bottles of Ciroc, 6 bottles of whiskey. this is my relaxation.
Just the necessities. Yeah,
exactly. Who needs to queue up a toilet roll? I can get vodka and whiskey. That's all I need. Stay in my outhouse and just relax. It lasted about a week. And it's like...
The 6 bottles of each.
That's actually a good week. Yeah, you know what? That's probably why it only lasted a week, because it actually was the end of the bottles. And it was like, I need to redefine myself. So I looked for, I had to internalize the situation first, because it hit me, as much as I didn't like to admit at the time, like I that was drinking out of proportion, like compared to who I normally am. So who am I? I'm Thomas Scannell. I'm not a drinker. Who am I? I'm a forward thinker. I work with children. I work with parents. I need to lead by example. When I bought a push bike, I'm going to go bike riding. Started bike riding 200 kilometers a week, running, fitness, started audible reading, and looked at it as a development time. So over that 6 months, that's when I become my dad blog and now the dad coach.
Yeah.
Because I saw how in a time of need, that's when all our necessities didn't mean nothing, meant fuck all. All my TVs in my house, everything, all it meant was more of something that I didn't need.
Yeah.
How much TV could you really watch? Like Netflix become, I've watched everything on Netflix in a week. What's the point of Netflix? So I need to work on me. So that's when I started developing myself. And then me and my partner sat down and said, like, what's going on in the world? Like, this isn't about us no more. Then we were other organizations started reaching out to us and talking about how people, loss of food, loss of support, loneliness, isolation, depression coming in. How can we do that? We started doing a book club on Facebook where I started reading on a day-to-day basis stories to the young children. We don't really see how many parents can't read or are illiterate. How many parents don't have the time to sit down because they're cooking, because they're a single parent family, or dad's at work and mum's cooking. So I started reading to parents. I started doing a fitness class in the morning with one of my friends. I paid him to come and do a half hour fitness to try and keep as much as normal. Easter, me and my partner delivered like 300 Easter eggs to individuals to try and keep some sort of normality. It was about the children were really affecting it. The parents, we don't want to admit it, but just talking and hearing what they're saying, everybody felt bad.
Yeah.
Third lockdown in, no one cares. I can truly say probably no one. The shops are filled. It doesn't make that much of a difference, but it's the older people that are being affected even more so now because they're so lonely.
Now I'm feeling like I definitely undersold you in the intro. Like,
I'm talking too much.
Delivering, like doing food bank sort of stuff and reading to kids. And this is amazing. Like these are really amazing things. Tell me a little bit about the food bank stuff that you've been doing.
So the food bank, it started in 2019. So in England, I don't know if you know a football player called Marcus Rashford. He's been having problems with the government that when it's holiday clubs, kids that get free school meals because they can't afford meals aren't getting enough. So in 2019, I run a project called Fit and Fed. So we supported them with isolation, physical fitness, and food, and education. Actually, we did an hour of education. So they would come to us for the summer holidays, which was 6 weeks long. We would feed them, give them food packages to go home, educate them on, it would normally be emotional well-being, because the children with less advantaged background normally struggle with emotional well-being because of a lack of a parent normally. Again, not stereotyping.
Right.
And so that lucky enough, we'd done that and we'd prepared ourselves for COVID without realizing it. So when COVID come in, it was like, who are the connections that we've already made that can allow us to provide for the community? So we was providing 300 meals a day for refugees.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a hard project. It was very hard. Refugees.
I bet.
Refugees, teenagers, primary school children. And then the food that we had left, we went and delivered to homeless people, adults in an area where we knew there was loads of homeless people. So it was like an all-day project, and I don't get paid enough to do this, but it's the kindness of my heart, number one. So when COVID started, all the connections I had built up from that project was literally a phone call away. So it's like literally COVID started 2 weeks in. This isn't going to end now. How can we help? Well, we're offering this, we're offering that. What can you do? I can be the hub for everybody to come and get stuff from. I can be the person, I'm not working. My youth centre that I don't own it, but I manage it, has too many buses. So me and my colleague can deliver food for any organisation that needs it. So we just come, and that gives me focus as well, because focus is massive. As human beings, we need a drive, a focus. So my work's been taken away from me. How can I better help the people that need help? I could have sat and bought 6 bottles of vodka every week. Literally, it wasn't a problem, it was summer. Everyone's enjoying England. Summer wasn't bad last year.
Yeah.
But I needed a focus, a drive. So it was, my drive was to help as many people off my back. And I think we ended up providing, I don't even want to give a number because I don't want to overstay or understate, but a lot of families ended up being helped over that period of time. Facebook actually approached us, and we've done, I've got to do another one this year, a family competition, a family fun day. So Facebook approached us and asked us to deliver a family internet day where we encourage families to learn about how to use social media together and how parents can engage with them. So we had, I think we had 20 families come onto it, and we done a game show for them to learn about social media. And it was in a fun and interactive way.
Yeah.
So you know, they had to learn, and I thought Facebook's learning points were boring. The game, it was extremely boring at times. And I actually said sorry a couple of times, but in order. And then we ended up giving everyone £20 Amazon vouchers to participate. And they didn't know we was going to do that. But I was like, you know what? They give us a certain amount of money to do everything. I'm happy giving back, and it builds my reputation as well in the community.
Yeah. That's awesome. What an incredible both experience and thing for you to do for the community. It's absolutely fantastic. And so you mentioned that you started a book club. What, if you were to pick like three of the books that you've read over the last year, what would you say were some of the most impactful books?
Okay. So the book club, this was for children. So it's different. So for children, I've always liked Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah.
So I don't think you've seen the film. That's been my childhood thing. And what I got from the film, which I didn't take from the book, was about learning about how to deal with anger, temper tantrums. And he goes to the island and he learns, sees another monster that's still got a temper tantrum, and how he has to manage that and come back home and you apologize to your parents. So I think kids take that on. Like I said, that's my favorite book personally, from a young child. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that book there, why has that stayed with me? And why have I only realized what it meant now? Maybe I've always known what it's meant. It's just taken me a while to verbalize it.
Right.
So reading books to your children with underlining meaning. So that is crazy. That was amazing for me. And I've always liked that. Another book that I like is the butterfly book. What's it called? The Hungry Caterpillar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The metamorphosis that it goes through.
Yeah. And you become a butterfly.
Yeah.
That was another book. And there's another book. I can't remember the name of it, but it's about a young girl who doesn't like eating string beans. And she wishes for something, and then every time she eats something different, she changes until the end. And the end, and the moral of the story is, I can't even remember what it is right now, because but it is my favorite book. And every book by Dr. Seuss, is it Dr. Seuss?
Yeah.
Everything that he does is the funny, friendly, and moral behind it.
The Places We'll Go. That's one of my favorites for reading girls.
Yeah.
Right. I think that. That tells a story of what life is going to be like, you know, all the bumps and bruises that you're going to experience, the highs and lows, particularly for my girls in what they're going through right now, is so unbelievably like a great moral story for them, that it's not always going to be good, that sometimes life is going to suck. I had this conversation with my daughter last night, where, you know, she was complaining, saying that life's never going to get better. It's always going to be hard and all that sort of thing. And I said to her, well, you have to choose happiness. You have to be open to it, because if you choose sadness, if you believe that only sadness will exist in your life, you will miss every opportunity to be happy because you won't see it. Whereas if you choose to be open to happiness, everyone that comes along, you'll embrace it and your life will be full of happy moments.
Yeah, and that reminds me of like a couple of things. So number one is The Secret. I don't believe in The Secret, full stop, number one. I think that's the biggest self.
See, my wife is going to listen to this and she's going to turn off right now.
Oh, I believe that's the biggest sales play, because but I believe in the essence of what you put out there, but you have to action it. You can't just say, I want to be happy. You have to action it. You can't just write on a piece of letter, I want to be a millionaire. Where's the action to follow that up? So yes, The Secret has a good start to it and a good sales ploy, but where's the action leading up to everything you do? So like you said, I'm unhappy. If you're going to wallow in unhappiness, I'm sorry to say you will be unhappy forever.
Yeah.
And a book that I read is called The World's Not As Unhappy As What It Seems.
Okay.
I will text you the real name of it. I'm sure it's that. And it explains how us in the Western world are actually in the top 1% of the whole entire world. Even though we look up to the 1% of us, which is Bill Gates and Bezos, when we look down, which we rarely do, unless we're looking at Oxfam or some sort of advertisement on TV, we are the top world in the world for what we have in us. And it was like, that made me think about where we are and how society is. So if I'm unhappy here, I will never find happiness anywhere.
Right.
How can I not? I really have choice, like freedom of speech. And I know a big thing over this last year is people believe they don't have freedom of speech and Twitter this and Facebook's doing that. In many societies that exist in today, if you say something wrong, you will be killed. You will go missing. And you're worried because someone's going to just block you on Facebook. Come on, like, let's think of real poverty and real problems. But we don't weigh it up enough in where we are today. Like
the freedom of speech, sorry to just interject, but
no worries.
The free speech side seems to be, it becomes a whole lot more of a conversation when you have platforms where you can sit on a computer thousands of kilometers away and be able to top stuff. When you're like sitting in front or standing in front of someone who's, you know, maybe that alpha person or whatever it is and is jacked up and whatever it is, you know, I'm going to say your speech might be a little calmed down a little bit.
I don't have freedom of speech and you can actually say whatever you want compared to like, I don't have the platforms to say, like, you know, you're not really looking at this from an objective point of view. You're looking at it from a selfish point of view because you want to say, who wants to listen to you? And that's the way. So my biggest thing that I try to do now is, I've always wanted to be a global and change the world. And, you know, it's almost wrong to use the term Michael Jackson with all the things that go on. No, like heal the world, make it a better place. I'm like, Thomas, heal your corner. Heal your corner. And if people want to follow you and do what they want to do, then they'll follow you and do what you want to do. Look, I don't mean do what you want to do and follow in what you're doing. I'm not
anyway. Thomas, are you a cult leader? Is that what you're building towards?
Yeah, none of that.
That's another podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Another one called Our Local Cult Leader. So we've been going for a good solid hour here. So I got one more finishing question for you. Yeah. You know, that I think is something that Graham and I answer all the time. So if you could snap your fingers and fix one thing about the way you parent right now, what would it be?
About the way that I parent, one thing, going back to the very start of this, the way that I'm parenting, I'm happy with what I'm doing. The children are in my vicinity, but I'm very unhappy with what I'm doing with the two children outside of my vicinity.
Yeah.
So without changing anything in history, and I have done a Thanos bang, what could I do? It would have a significant impact on their lives and be able to verbalize what I want from or want from them and they expect from me and how we can work together. So for me, what I would change on my parenting is what I don't have any impact on at this present moment in time, which is the children I don't have contact in. Because even though I say I deal with things very easily, it's a reoccurring thing and I like to deal with things. It's the only thing in my life that I've never been able to deal with and come to a conclusion and resolution, because the resolution that there is now is not appropriate.
Yeah. That's a great answer. It really is, that you want to have a positive impact in their lives as well. And you know, that's really admirable. There's a lot of dads that would walk away from that situation, throw their hands up and say, I'm not responsible for this, right? This is somebody else's decision. But for you to want to resolve that is a really admirable thing. So I think, you know, we've been going for just over an hour. We'll kind of close it out here. Thank you, everybody who's listening. Thomas, thank you so much for giving us the time. This was an awesome conversation. I really enjoyed it.
I can talk a lot, so I'm really sorry.
No, it was fantastic. So I'm going to put all of the links to get in touch with Thomas and his dad coaching, his podcast, his YouTube channel. All of those notes will be in the show notes for this episode. Please make sure you reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, through our email, which is also in the show notes. And let us know if you have any comments, if you got any questions, and we look forward to seeing all of you next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.